Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Again, a happy Veterans Day weekend. It's a real pleasure to have Diane Dale, a fine art painter from Tucson, here in the studio. Good morning, Diane. How are you today?
Oh, tickled to be here.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you are here. Let me give a brief intro. Diane's a native of Texas, and she attended the University of Texas Austin Fine Arts Program. She has loved art since childhood, reinforced through her father taking her to the zoo to draw. Diane, though, fell into the fashion career by sheer accident while studying painting at L'Accademia di Belle Arte in Rome. She also studied sculpture in the Italian language in Perugia, Italy, later watercolor at San Francisco Conservatory of Art, and then painting and drawing in both New York and Michigan. So for over 15 years, while in the fashion industry, as she says, her full-time day job, which spanned between Europe and New York, Diane always had her sketchbook and watercolors at her side. She then turned to print advertising and television commercials following the fashion industry streak, did that for many years, before just 7 years ago deciding, all right, I'm going to dedicate myself 100% creating fine art paintings. So what a great yet another encore is at Motion, I think, Diane.
Well, we're all full of passages, aren't we?
I like that. I like that very much. Well, when you and I were talking about your coming on the show, you mentioned that fashion industry wore you out, and so you moved into advertising and television commercials. Now, quite honestly, those are not industries known for pussyfoots. So I had my hunch you still had a lot of fire in you to continue that track.
Well, it was a new page, so it was much more inspiring. And I took what I learned from the fashion industry into styling and TV commercials and print ads.
Well, I think our listeners would appreciate, though, go ahead and you can brag and name drop, but I'd love to hear a little bit about your fashion industry experience, because it was at a time when some really big names were jumping big hoops, weren't they?
Well, and it was an exciting time to be in Rome, because it was the apex of the Fellini days and the Lena Wertmüller movies, and all the movie stars were there, whom I was too young to even recognize. But I worked for Yves Saint Laurent there, and it was really quite exciting. So, and it was a fun time to be there. And I took the job because when I was in school, somebody asked me if I wanted to work for Yves Saint Laurent. And I said, well, I like the pants with the pleats. And it means I don't have to go back to the States. I can stay longer. So, and then when I finally moved back to the States, I was in New York and worked for Valentino, opened the first Valentino boutique there.
Oh, how exciting. How exciting. And so you think about the, you know, coming out of a fine arts program and then shifting into the fashion industry, you might explain some of the roles that you had then. You know, you were working with displays and still color and the fundamentals from fine art.
The interesting thing is that the general director of Yves Saint Laurent came to the Saint Laurent boutique, and he seemed to like me. He said, La petite américaine, c'est pas mal. So
right. They
were sending me after him all the time. And he taught me how to do displays. And I thought, oh, this is just like painting. It's like a collage. And I did white-on-white collages at that time. So you kind of, in retrospect, when I look back, I learned a lot from color from Yves Saint Laurent, from Missoni, and structure, I guess, from all of them. So,
which, again, as I said in the introduction, you always didn't go anywhere, though, without your own sketchbooks and watercolors.
No, to my detriment sometimes.
Oh, is that right? Because?
Well, I was sent to a French designer, a Japanese French company, to buy the collection for somebody else that wasn't there, mm-hmm. and to take notes. And I don't take notes. I do sketches and colors and everything, and they ripped up my sketchbook.
Ah.
But luckily, I was told I didn't have to. If I didn't like it, I didn't have to buy it. So I just said, thank you, I'll go to lunch now.
So there. Well, the whole prospect of what was playing out then of a a fashion industry that was emanating with film. I mean, that must have been a really hot combination as well.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And my most memorable, I think, time in Italy working for Saint Laurent was Irene Pappas was my client, and Audrey Hepburn. Oh. So it was just, it was wonderful.
And so you helped with Audrey's collection with it then?
She would come in, and everybody loved Saint Laurent. It was a hot item at that time. So
that's great. The stories and the collections that you've got, and then the move to New York. That's a, if I might use your words, that's a whole different city of different colors then.
Oh, it was. I think it was traumatizing for the first 9 months because someone said, "Well, where did you live before?" And I said, "Rome." And they said, "Well, why would you live in Rome? They don't pick up the garbage." And
and they, that sounds like
but
an
they
American
have four-hour lunches, and life is pretty grand there. So it was nice.
And what did you do first when you came to the United States?
I worked for Valentino.
Valentino, okay.
And there were, it was interesting because there was an artist that did the windows named Victor Hugo, and he was a friend of Andy Warhol's. So it was really quite an interesting time to be there.
Because that, of course, was really the accelerating activity around Andy Warhol at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All of them.
And that you carry those experiences with you. So let me shift again for our listeners. We're speaking with Diane Dale, and do go out to dianedale.com to see her work. And so the portfolios within the bigger portfolio. You've got such a broad collection of work, from botanicals to pets to the circus. Tell us a little bit about those.
I think the reason that there is such a wide spectrum is my father said if I was going to be a good artist, I had to be able to paint and draw anything that came my way. So it became a thing of appeal to me. At one time I did white on white collages, and after that I became much more of a figurative artist. So the subject matter just kind of floats to me. It appears all of a sudden when I'm thinking, okay, now what's next? And the Nest series started with I was taking care of a friend's house in the foothills, and I went in, and at the front door there was a nest that had blown down, a mourning dove's nest. Mm-hmm. And it was right there, so I slid a piece of paper under it and took it back to the studio. And it became the whirling dervish that's on my website.
On your website, that's right. Mm-hmm. You've done countless now renditions of nests and birds and
yes.
the collection for it. The circus.
I
the
love
whimsical
the circus.
Circus.
I have always been one that loved to go to the circus in whatever country I was in. So that was one of my first series, and I think it's happy, joyous. I like the motion in it. So,
and Diane's circus, one of them is the big oversized set of shoes, and it's just the shoes, or
yes.
it's the trampoline or the daredevils, and just a portion of their bodies and the motion and the color.
The shoes are actually in the studio. I have those, and that painting's called Where Bozo's Toes Goes.
Yeah, Where Bozo's Toes Goes. I like that. And then, of course, one of my favorites, being the dog lover that I am, is Pooch. So you got that big old dog just, which is exactly what I'd see my Golden do.
Those actually came about the pet portraits because someone had given me a snapshot of their dog. And one night I couldn't sleep, and I thought, how strange. Well, okay. And I sat down, and I did this small painting and put it in a funny frame, and the reaction on her face was incredible when she saw it. So,
and so your pieces, so in the case of these pets, are these then commissioned works you've enjoyed
yes.
taking on for people? Oh, how lovely. I know who I need to get to your studio soon. In fact, tell us a little bit about your studio, because it's a unique place.
Oh, my studio was once a photography studio. It's on stone, and it's I'm lucky enough to have 17-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
I live there now. And as you walk in, there's an office on one side, and then you walk through a good-sized gallery and straight back into my studio. And it's got a loft in the studio where it houses a bunch of bric-a-brac ugly dolls, because I don't seem to like the pretty ones. I pick up the torn and tattered ones that look like people have touched them and loved them and played with
the
them.
The Velveteen
and,
Rabbit story, we know it well.
And circus memorabilia and other things like that. And then I've got a lot going on there on the walls and everything. But I enjoy the volume of the space.
Yeah, and usually that to have that space to exercise, you know, your vision as well as your physical being. Obviously, Diane, your life still, having said, such a rich background in Italy, you travel there frequently as well today.
Yes.
And then also, I know you've travels back to your home state of Texas, so you've got some Black Angus cows that are coming in a new series.
Oh, yes. This was funny.
This will show the diversity of Diane Dale, no question, from botanicals that look like I'm looking at Monet's work in Paris, all the way to the pooch, to now the cows, or the cattle, I should say, but I'm not from Texas.
Well, I was. I decided I was going to go to Houston to visit family and go look at, go to art galleries and museums, which is always fun there. And before I started my road trip, my family said, "Well, you've got to stop at Marfa, Texas." So after dinner one night, I was driving back to, I think it was called Fort Davis, where I was staying, which was quite near. And there was this, and it's right on the edge of the Big Bend country. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And it happened to have been a beautiful moment where the sun was going down and everything was pastel. And here were here was this herd of Black Angus cattle. And I stopped the car and got out with my phone and started taking pictures. And they started moving towards me. And before I knew it, they were in my face. And I thought they were really funny and entertaining. And I like to paint where you almost have to figure out what it is. So they melt into each other. And it's been fun because it's given me a whole new subject matter, which is still, I think I'm up to 5 or 6 paintings now.
And so for a series of you, is there a set number, or do you find you keep involved in that until the next fun thing hits you?
I do that, but then all of a sudden there's something that crops up where I have to go back to it again and look at it, because while I was on this trip, an artist friend of mine here in Tucson said, "I've been calling you because I have 2 nests for you that
you
fell out of the tree."
And you add it to the bric-a-brac collection with the dolls. That's right. Well, all I can say is if we see a herd of Black Angus cattle in downtown Tucson, we'll probably know they're connected with one of your projects. Yeah, indeed. Diane, I had mentioned again and also in the introduction that you shifted from fashion, you know, went through that reentry process to the States on multiple levels in the fashion world, but then shifted to television commercials and print advertising. And you said an interesting thing to me when we were setting up the conversation today, and that was you said, "I liked it because I could control it more."
Well, what I did, it controlled more because I did basically the clothing for a lot of it. And so it was a lot of fun. I was working with what I knew. I mean, if they had sent me out for or put me behind a camera, who knows what would have
happened.
But this was something that was fun and controllable. And I do things as long as I enjoy them and as long as they're fun. And then I have to stop if it's not. If it becomes too tedious, and then it's over. It's ready for a new passage.
And you know, that is a lesson that many times many of us don't embrace as openly, and thus we get stuck and we don't realize that that this whole idea of a career can mean this idea of flopping into something.
I think other than flopping into things, it's just a movement. It's probably every passage is probably a format, a new format of the same thing going forward. So
now you're into your Black Angus cattle phase, I'll call it. But your style, tell us about how your style has evolved over time. I mean, watercolor is not the easiest medium to work with. I mean, you really have to think about managing the light and the space and the layering.
Actually, I always find that I manage white first.
Okay.
And then as far as watercolor goes, I just try not to manage it. I try to go with the flow because once you mar the paper and you've made a mistake, even though they say you can fix it, I don't find it fixable. I have to move on and do it again. And otherwise, I lose the freshness. And I try to pass that same freshness on with my oil painting as well.
And so, but that's a very different technique, oil painting and watercolor. It's like painting right-handed and left-handed.
It is. It is. Because you're painting, you're preserving the white with the watercolor, or at least I do. And with the oil, you're going just the opposite. You're putting the color where you want it.
That's right. The other thing, of course, many of your works certainly could be, you know, more encased or something you would have in a studio, but you do a lot of plein air work as well. So how is it you go paint your cattle scenes or your outdoor landscapes and the like and allow yourself, where do I put the frame?
Basically, that's something that I think I've just, for the most part, has just, out of doing it for so long, just happens.
Right. Okay. Doing just the shoes was where the painting was, as opposed to the entire figure.
Yeah, but I also have found that sometimes I paint a little too close to the edge, so I do keep frames here to do a setup with water with oil paintings more than anything.
That's right. So the 2D medium, of course, is what we'd see primarily on your site, but 3D work also in your background?
Oh,
sculpture and so on?
I've done a little metal sculpture, but right now I'm interested in, I started building some paper nests, and I'm going to have one of them cast. And it's in corrugated cardboard mostly.
Oh, interesting. And so you'll cast from corrugated eventually into bronze then?
Right.
Which is, of course, that's a whole process in and of itself, an experience as an artist and an artist and artisan together.
Right. I'm having to get some help on that because it's been too many years since I've done that sort of work.
But the technology has changed a lot.
I know.
To be able to do it, which again, you know, we've had a couple bronze artists here on the show that now the advent of computer modeling that allows them to jump through. It doesn't make it any easier, though, when you know you have to preserve at the end the authenticity of your piece.
Right. But it's just incredible what you can do now.
Yeah, that's great. But still a day where you can just go grab your sketchbook and your watercolors, is that the hot spot for you?
I work more in the studio, and I enjoy working in the studio because that way I don't have to fight my allergy attacks outside.
We've got an acupuncturist who can help you with that.
Good.
The idea, Diane, of you're making the decision 7 years ago to say, okay, now I'm going to do my art full time. Was there something specific that prompted you to rise to that occasion? Was it always a plan? Was it serendipity? Was it you got so many commissions that you could? How did that come to
pass?
Well,
you know, I think you just go with life and you keep going, and then all of a sudden somebody says something to you. And at that time, my late partner, Ken Figueredo, said, why don't you stop all this other stuff? You don't even like it. And I thought, oh, well, he is right. And
that's our first segment about when is enough enough.
That's it.
You know, when's enough enough, and that you know that now another door has been opened to you.
Uh-huh. And he said, you're not going to starve to death, you know.
Yeah. And you know, I think that a lot of people that you know, get dissuaded from pursuing their passion of art or don't get to it until later in life is because they've got, for whatever reason, that voice of you're going to become a starving artist.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend when I was doing styling in New York, a photographer who was, I think, in his early 20s, Rick Guidotti. And Rick, one day I said, what made you a photographer? And he said, well, I wasn't really good in school because I didn't pay attention and I loved photography and this is all I ever wanted to do. And I happened to turn on TV the other night, and he was on TED Talks.
There you go.
And he was, I mean, it was just remarkable to see him again.
That's right. And to keep that thread of the passion, doing what he did well, and having so much fun around it.
Right.
Great. Diane Dale, thank you so much. Again, for our listeners, it's Diane Dale, DALE.com. Wonderful series of portfolios that are out there, and I can't wait to see the ones of the Black Angus cattle. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.